The presentation you're about to hear is a recording of the keynote address given by George Ayala, Executive Officer of the Global Forum on Men Who Have Sex with Men and HIV, on February 22, 2011, in Oakland, California. This keynote was the opening presentation of a two-day summit organized by the California STD HIV Prevention Training Center through a grant from the Centers for Disease Control. The purpose of the summit was to bring together leaders in the diffusion of evidence-based interventions, both researchers and community-based organizations, to discuss the challenges and possibilities for implementation of these interventions with African-American and Latino MSM.
You know, my job here today is really to kind of raise questions and to get the thinking going in the room. And I have been for a long time thinking about the evidence-based interventions and the diffusion of those evidence-based interventions, and have been frustrated personally and professionally by how constrained I have felt from time to time in my own work, in my own HIV prevention work with Black and Latino gay men, gay bi men. And I'm going to say gay bi men instead of MSM, because that's pretty much primarily who we work with, not exclusively, but primarily. And so, you know, I'm going to share with you my work and the work of other people who've been doing research with Latino and Black gay bi men. And I want you to kind of take from the work what you will to inform the discussions that you're going to have in your small groups and throughout the next few days. And I want to offer a set of questions that could help to organize, to inform those discussions. My principal question and my principal goal here is to ask, how do we take what we have and do better? And then the other questions kind of follow from that. How do we draw from evidence-based interventions but not be limited to them? How effective are we in evolving our conversations about Latino, Black, gay, bi men's lives? How innovative are we being? How likely are we to think differently and in an evolving manner about gay, bi men of color? Are our programs, interventions relevant to the lived experiences of Latino, Black, gay, bi men? How useful are our programs, interventions to our own lives? And finally, how are we more likely to contemplate deeply about the value of Latino, Black, gay, bi men? Regardless of geographic variations, gay men and other men who have sex with men continue to be the most disproportionately affected risk group in the United States, representing more than half of all people living with HIV and AIDS, and more than half of all new HIV infections across race and ethnicity. HIV seroprevalence among Latino and Black MSM, gay bi men, is particularly troubling, with estimates that range from 17% to 46%. Until recently, the disproportionate impact of the HIV/AIDS epidemic on Latino and Black gay bi men was largely attributed to higher individual level behavioral risk for HIV in these groups. For example, low level of knowledge, inaccurate assessments of risk, low perceptions of personal vulnerability to HIV, and a lack of motivation or personal intention to practice sex, safer sex. However, it's becoming increasingly clear that the interpersonal and social context of behavioral risk must be better understood if we are to be effective in our prevention efforts. Researchers have increasingly looked to the compounding effects of social discrimination to explain persistent racial ethnic disparities across a range of health issues. For example, racism can affect health outcomes in at least two ways. First, racial and ethnic discrimination usually result in social practices and economic policy that restrict employment, housing, education, and healthcare opportunities, which in turn can produce negative health outcomes. Second, racism can produce negative emotional and stress responses in those experiencing discrimination. With regard to Latino, Black, and other gay bi men of color, sexual risk for HIV is influenced by at least three forms of social discrimination: homophobia, racism, and financial hardship. In the HIV field, there have been various studies that have examined the potential effects of homophobia, racism, and financial hardship on the sexual health of Latino and Black gay bisexual men. Research has shown powerful associations between experiences of discrimination and social alienation, depression, substance use, participation in difficult sexual situations, personal shame, which in turn were positively correlated with sexual risk. Past qualitative research also suggests that Latino and Black gay bi men experience racial stereotyping, segregation, and social exclusion, including from mainstream gay communities. Racial segregation and stereotyping has the potential to influence sexual partner selection, shape sexual expectations, and determine the characteristics of sexual networks in ways that might heighten the risk for HIV transmission. For example, race-based sexual stereotyping may result in segregation of sexual networks that in turn creates heightened risk for HIV transmission because of elevated background HIV seroprevalence among gay and bisexual men of color. In other words, if overall HIV prevalence is higher among Latino and Black gay men, and sexual partnering choices that gay men of color make are influenced by segregation, thereby limiting their choices of sexual partners to other Latino and Black gay bi men, their risk for HIV exposure is potentially greater. As this line of research evolves, we are now learning that the sources and types of discrimination matter and are cumulative and may have differential salience for different men of color. For example, homophobia from family and racism from gay peers may be more salient for Latino and Black gay bi men who may view these sources of discrimination as also possible sources of social support and hence with mixed feelings. Moreover, experiences of discrimination add up. Experiencing two or three co-occurring forms of discrimination leads to worse sexual health outcomes than experiencing one or no discrimination at all. Moreover, the impact that homophobia and racism has on the sexual risk for HIV seems to be, at least in part, mediated by the lack of social support and difficult or riskier sexual situations men may find themselves in. In a recent study, Trista Bingham, Junyup Kim, Daryl Wheeler, Greg Millett, and I modeled the impact of social discrimination and financial hardship on the sexual risk for HIV among over 1,000 Latinos and over 1,000 Black men who have sex with men, recruited with responder-driven sampling techniques using data taken from a CDC-funded three-city study we called Brothers y Hermanos. We examined the correlations between experiences of social discrimination, financial hardship, and the sexual risk for HIV among gay bi men living in Los Angeles, New York, and Philadelphia. The team hypothesized that experiences of social discrimination, and in this study we defined it as racism and homophobia, for example, being made fun of, called names, treated unfairly in the last 12 months, and financial hardship, for example, running out of money for basic necessities in the last 12 months, and lack of social support, for example, feeling isolated and alone, no one to talk with, would each be positively associated with unprotected anal intercourse with casual male sex partners. We also hypothesized that experiences of social discrimination and financial hardship would be positively associated with lack of social support. We went on to hypothesize that experiences of social discrimination, financial hardship, and lack of social support would each be associated with reports of being in situations that make safer sex more difficult. For example, sex in exchange for drugs, money, or a place to sleep, using drugs before or during sex, having a partner that is perceived to be more masculine than oneself, and having sex in a casual partner's home. And last, we hypothesized that participation in riskier or more difficult sexual situations would mediate the associations between social discrimination, financial hardship, and the lack of social support on the risk for HIV. In other words, we believe that discrimination and financial hardship elevated risk by negatively influencing social support and increasing the likelihood that men would find themselves in these difficult sexual situations. To test the hypotheses, the research team conducted univariate analysis and entered experiences of homophobia, racism, and financial hardship as predictors of lack of social support in a multiple linear regression equation. Univariate analysis confirmed hypothesis number one. And if you look at this table here, when you compare guys who participated in risky sex, as the way we defined it as unprotected anal intercourse with a casual male partner in the last 12 months, when you compare those guys with guys who didn't have that, the guys who experienced racism, financial hardship, homophobia, lack of support, and likelihood to participate in this difficult sexual situations were riskier. Results from the regression analysis supported hypothesis two, with experiences of discrimination and financial hardship predicting lack of social support and financial hardship. To test the third hypothesis, the team then entered experiences of social discrimination, financial hardship, and lack of social support as predictors of participation in potentially more difficult sexual situations. Lack of social support, together with experiences of homophobia and financial hardship, were associated with participation in potentially riskier sexual situations. And finally, to test whether risky sexual situations mediate the associations between social discrimination, financial hardship, and lack of social support on the risk for HIV, the research team entered all those variables into a regression analysis as predictors of risk. And as illustrated in this slide, the addition of the hypothesized mediation variables, participation in difficult sexual situations, panned itself out. So in other words, when you entered all of these variables into a statistical equation, what ends up happening is that they end up canceling themselves out to some extent, leaving difficult sexual situations. And in statistical terms, this means that although these things are all related to risk, they're related to risk in a certain order. And they're actually, they produce situations that make it more likely for men to find themselves in difficult sexual situations. So here's where it gets interesting. The team found statistically significant direct paths between experiences of racism and HIV risk among Black, gay, bi men. Interestingly, this path was not statistically significant for Latino gay bi men. On the other hand, the path between racism and lack of social support was only statistically significant for Latino gay bi men. Further, the path between lack of social support and HIV risk was statistically significant among Latino gay bi men, but not among Black gay bi men. Finally, the path between financial hardship and HIV risk was significant among Latino gay bi men, but not for Black gay bi men. In other words, mediating factors that could explain how racism and financial hardship might influence the risk for HIV for Latino and Black gay bi men differed in some important ways. We think that skin color and immigration status may play a role in the differential experiences of racism and homophobia, financial hardship for Latino gay bi men. Factors that were not examined in our study, but that merit for future in-depth investigation. After all, racism and financial hardship may be instigated and influenced by skin color and immigration status, among other factors, which together represent a complicated constellation of factors that shape how and who experience these particular forms of social discrimination. For Latino, Black, gay, bi men, it may be that homophobia and racism heightens the risk for HIV by decreasing social support and increasing the likelihood of participation in difficult sexual situations. The potentially damaging health and social consequences of racism, homophobia, and financial hardship on individual well-being are well established in the research literature by other investigators. Social discrimination and the strategies used by Latino and Black gay bi men to cope with and minimize exposure to such discrimination can shape both opportunities an individual has to meet sexual partners, as well as meanings they attach to those relationships. For example, social structures supportive of racial ethnic identity and important sources of connectedness, like parents, siblings, aunts, and uncles, may exert gender role conformity pressure to marry women and have children, while social structures supportive of gay identities, like gay friends and coworkers, may fail to support Latino and Black men under the weight of race-based stereotyping and sexual objectification that happen in the gay sexual marketplace. In this regard, issues associated with multiple marginalization, being the target of both racism and homophobia faced by Latino, Black, gay, bi men, including how gay bi men of color manage competing loyalties they sometimes feel to their families and communities of origin versus their families and communities of choice, are poignantly relevant to their sexual health and wellness. In addition, how racism and homophobia are enacted and experienced may vary as a function of skin color, as in the case for Black or dark-skinned Latinos, and or immigration, socioeconomic, and HIV sero status. The above study points to two possible targets for intervention: social support and difficult sexual situations. We may be able to buffer the effects of discrimination by supporting and enhancing social support, particularly from family and friends. The HIV/AIDS epidemic has had an inordinate and constraining influence on contemporary ideas about Latino and Black gay male health, sexual health. For example, sexual health is often and simply understood as the personal capacity to achieve abstinence before marriage, monogamy, the absence of sexually transmitted diseases, including HIV, and or the consistent, correct, motivated use of condoms during sex. From a public health perspective, deviation from any one of these would be cause for concern and reason to intervene. This view of sexual health has been codified by public health, by public policy, research, and practice. Scrutinizing Latino and Black gay bi male sexual practices through this lens results in narrow understandings of sexual health. In the closing chapter of Framing the Sexual Subject, Carlos Cáceres eloquently underscores this point by writing, an overly superficial focus on sexual practices as defined by medical and behavioral science categories, rather than as understood and enacted by individuals concerned, will inevitably lead to naive formulations of behavior change and to associated problems for intervention and program development. Further, to map human practices in terms of endless biomedical categories is likely to reinforce the construction of a medicalized body, its parts symbolically defined not only in relationship to normal and abnormal sexual practices, but also in regard to AIDS behavioral risk. Ironically, the HIV/AIDS industry has been conspicuously silent about gay sexuality. This silence has retarded our conversations about sexual health by excluding examinations of gender, pleasure, satisfaction, and desire. Yes, there is good epidemiologic counting of same-sex behavior among men. We continuously ask gay men to report how often we use condoms during anal sex, and with how many sexual partners of which gender, in what positions, in a given window of time. As if this would teach us how to reduce the risk for sexually transmitted infections. Our obsessive sex counting, however, yields only an impoverished understanding of what gay men think and feel when we have sex. In the end, we learn little about gender, pleasure, satisfaction, and desire, the place each of those things occupies in the lives of gay bi men, and the meaning we bring to each. The sexual health of Latino and Black gay bi men must be understood in the context of contemporary interpersonal, sexual, and social realities that Latino and Black gay bi men must navigate on a day-to-day basis. As illustrated earlier, these realities involve substance use, violence, sexual assault, homelessness, social isolation, and other social factors that are constantly at play in the sexual exchanges between men. In fact, the co-occurrences of sexually transmitted diseases like syphilis with depression, anxiety, anger, low self-esteem, histories of childhood sexual abuse, and substance abuse among gay bi men, including gay bi men of color, has been documented repeatedly by researchers for two decades. Few issues underscore the importance of understanding disease risk in its interpersonal, sexual, and social context more poignantly than gay men's use of the internet to find sex. Internet sex seeking resulting in sexual hookups made via online chat rooms or personal ads has been associated with high-risk sexual behavior among gay bi men by some researchers. However, more recent data attributes, in part, declines in new HIV infections among gay men in San Francisco to gay men's use of the internet to serosort. Serosorting refers to the practice of seeking sex partners that are the same HIV status as oneself as a strategy for minimizing the risk for HIV exposure or transmission. Other qualitative research studies reveal that many Latino and Black gay bi men enjoy the convenience of internet sex seeking, and many prefer the internet to bars or clubs because it's easier to manage the risk for rejection in social contexts where race-based norms of physical attractiveness exist, which many men, especially men of color, find oppressive. Internet sex seeking is also less expensive than going out and is unapologetically sexual, which some gay bi men find liberating given the social stigma associated with homosexuality. More research designed to understand the internet as social space for gay and bi men of color is needed to inform our prevention approaches. Relationships represent yet another key, albeit understudied, context within which sexual risk and health could be better understood. Multiple HIV/AIDS prevention studies indicate that gay men are less likely to practice safe sex with close, regular relationship partners compared with sexual partners perceived as casual. This is of particular concern for serodiscordant couples and couples that are unaware of their respective sero status. There is some evidence to suggest that among serodiscordant gay couples, anal sex without condoms is more likely to occur among gay bisexual men of color. Misinformation, lack of social support, heterosexism, and deficits in communication and negotiation skills specific to relationships can create unique barriers to safer sex practices for gay couples. For example, when communication is impaired due to unexpressed fears about HIV transmission, potential illness, relationship instability, loss, future uncertainty, and a desire to protect each other against these concerns, many aspects of the relationship important for sustaining sexual health in gay couples can be negatively affected. In addition, key emotional issues between gay serodiscordant couples, when left unaddressed, can compromise the couple's capacity to guard against HIV transmission. Addressing these issues and legitimizing the emotional and intimacy needs of gay men in relationships may be critical to promoting sexual health in Latino and Black gay bi men. Effectively addressing disparities in sexually transmitted infections requires that we scrutinize these disease paradigms for their potential to pathologize. HIV prevention research and practice, for instance, has at times resulted in problematic and reductionistic characterizations of gay bi male sexual behavior and has limited our ability to leverage personal, social, or community assets in the interest of research or promoting sexual health. For example, Latino and Black gay bi men's sexual behavior is often described as risky, resulting from diminished self-worth, social disconnection, and deficits in requisite skills from negotiating safer sex. Indeed, gay bi men of color have at times been portrayed as incomplete, the passive targets of social oppression, especially homophobia, sexual silence, and family ostracism. While Latino and gay bi men are the targets of systematic social oppression and discrimination, the emotional and erotic pleasure aspects of gay men's sexual decision-making and the social nature of sexual exchange are rarely addressed in prevention sector. Although important and more nuanced works in this area exist, they seldom get applied to public health policy and practice, and even more rarely receive ongoing research support. Public health practitioners and researchers alike are left with the question, how should we conceptualize sexual health for Latino and Black gay bi men in the context of sexual health disparities and the dominance of disease paradigms? Recent concerns about possible resurgence of new HIV infections and soaring rates of syphilis among gay bi men bring added urgency to this question. But as public debate and media hype continue, Latino and Black men who have and enjoy sex with other men see less and less salience in contemporary sexual health campaigns, as those programs are singularly focused on HIV/AIDS, become watered down, or fail to address the subjective experiences of gay men in visible, sex-positive, and affirming ways. With this social-political environment as backdrop, sexual health campaigns at their worst aim to scare, shame, and or blame gay men into changing their behavior. A reflection of today's general culture of fear, these simplistic and overly generic prevention campaigns may be behind what is often referred to as HIV prevention fatigue or HIV/AIDS burnout, because gay men become turned off by messages that have little to do with their lived experiences and sexual health. In 2004, the Institute for Gay Men's Health, a former program of the two of the oldest, largest AIDS service organizations in the United States, AIDS Project Los Angeles and Gay Men's Health Crisis in New York, produced a monograph entitled Holding Open Space. The monograph reports the proceedings of a meeting convened to discuss disturbingly high HIV seroprevalence estimates among gay men of color. During the meeting, the group of researchers and community-based providers gathered to grapple with gender, pleasure, satisfaction, and desire while raising important questions about the role sex and sexuality play in framing alternative responses to HIV prevention and the sexual health needs of gay men of color. In the monograph, they ask, is there such a thing as Black sex, Latino sex, Native sex, or Asian sex? What about thug sex, bi sex, hot sex, kinky sex, pussy sex? Is there a local understanding of these ideas? How have these ideas changed over time in communities? How do community members act on their beliefs about sex in relationship to the risk for HIV? This group went on to suggest a set of guiding principles in prevention work with gay men of color, a point that I'll come back to in a moment. Although their focus was on HIV prevention, their recommendations nevertheless gives us a solid standing point for framing important parameters of sexual health for gay bi men of color. We need conceptual frameworks for gay bi male sexual health that move beyond debate and media hype and that abandon preoccupations with individual risk behavior, disease, and deficits. Such frameworks have the potential to more clearly underscore how social and cultural contexts can come to influence sexual health and why gender, pleasure, satisfaction, and desire represent legitimate and critical foci for future sexual health research and practice. There is now consensus among HIV behavioral researchers and practitioners that combination approaches to prevention, sustained over time and tailored to meet the specific local needs of gay bi men of color, can effectively lower HIV prevalence and incidence in this group. A claim, by the way, asserted by community-based prevention practitioners long before researchers began talking about combo approaches. Combination approaches combine and integrate biomedical and behavioral strategies with community-level and structural-level approaches. These include, as an example, delivering behavioral interventions like skills building focused on proper condom use and safer sex negotiation, with HIV treatment, ensuring that all people living with HIV have access to treatment care and support services, while addressing barriers to access, for example, sensitization programs targeting healthcare providers who may be ignorant to our needs. The argument for combination HIV prevention approaches is supported by the fact that a singular focus on individual, group, community, or structural factors associated with heightened risk for HIV transmission will not suffice if the goal is to reduce or eliminate HIV incidence at the population level. Similarly, although there is a renewed attention to such biomedical strategies as pre-exposure prophylaxis, overly medicalized approaches are unlikely on their own to result in significant long-term gains because serious inequities in access to basic health care persist across the country. For example, gay bi men of color cannot benefit from biomedical interventions if their access to them is undermined by their cost or by social isolation resulting from stigma, discrimination, or violence. The problem of HIV must be understood in its interpersonal, social, and cultural context if our solutions are to have any chance of succeeding. Successful HIV prevention programming requires varied, multi-level, and well-resourced approaches sustained over many years. Since 2007, the UN Joint Program on AIDS, or UNAIDS, has recommended combination approaches to HIV prevention, acknowledging the importance of sensitively delivering HIV prevention interventions that are tailored to the specific needs of men who have sex with men, while addressing more broadly their human rights. In fact, the agency's recommendations for a minimum standard package of prevention services for governments developing HIV prevention programs for gay bi men assert the importance of human rights and the removal of structural barriers that undermine access to HIV-related services. UNAIDS guidance for HIV prevention goes on to recommend promotion of condom and water-based lubricant use, empowerment of gay, bisexual, lesbian, and transgender communities to participate equally in social and political life, availability of safe virtual and physical space where gay bi men can meet and seek information and referrals for care and support, and access to medical and legal assistance for boys and men who have experienced sexual coercion or violence. A similarly comprehensive package of HIV prevention services for men who have sex with men and for transgender people was recently endorsed during a regional consensus building consultation with researchers, providers, and advocates in Asia. What's striking about this consensus statement is that it explicitly suggests framing HIV within the broader sexual health needs of gay bi men and transgender people, as well as integrating mass and targeted media, including the internet, as a component in the delivery of prevention messages, health promotion, and social support services. This is important because, given the relative silence of AIDS sector on issues of sex and sexuality, centering sexual health issues is imperative. The consensus statement goes on to emphasize targeted peer-led outreach, support groups, drop-in centers, referral mechanisms, and other community programs designed, run by, and for bi gay men as important strategies for maximizing service utilization and coverage, access to sexually transmitted infection management, and HIV counseling and testing. Similar recommendations and guidelines focused on gay men and transgender populations are being developed by the World Bank in collaboration with Johns Hopkins Center for Public Health and Human Rights and the World Health Organization. These efforts aim to answer several key questions critical to a strengthened global response to the HIV epidemic among gay men. As well-researched HIV prevention guidance evolves, it is vital that advocates and gay bi men of color create a common voice to ensure that guidance is provided at the community level. Gay bi men, including those living with HIV, should be leading research, programmatic, and policy responses to HIV in their communities to ensure that public health strategies have their biggest impact. Moreover, Latino and Black gay bi men should not become subordinate to draconian government policies or political agendas that deviate from evidence-informed approaches to prevention. Nor should researchers, public health officials, or policymakers succumb to individualistic, overly medicalized disease control paradigms, which typically lead to diminished or substandard programs or services. Research has shown no public health advantage to adopting more prescriptive STI or HIV program and policy approaches. But strong guidance and implementation of evidence-based interventions are not enough to ensure the effectiveness of HIV prevention with gay, bi men of color. Even if combination approaches are adopted, the best guidance and most robust research must be balanced by client-centered and rights-based principles of practice. This means that gay bi advocates, including gay bi men of color living with HIV, are front and center in identifying their specific needs within their respective political, social, economic, and epidemiologic contexts. All actors in the HIV sector, researchers, policymakers, practitioners, must challenge stigma, social discrimination, and violence directed at men who have sex with men. They must also be unwavering in reversing silence and denial about the disparities in HIV-related health outcomes and funding among gay bi communities of color. Principles of practice have long been deliberated and published by AIDS service practitioners and advocates, but are often overlooked in policy discussions because of a narrow focus on evidence or science in substantiating HIV-related interventions and program strategies. The following are some important core principles. The imperative of reducing STI and HIV infection rates should not impinge on personal freedoms. All people, including gay men and gay men living with HIV, deserve the same level of support, healthcare, support services, and political rights as anyone else. All people, including gay bi men and gay bi men living with HIV, are entitled to fulfilling and satisfying sex lives. Barring harm to others, all people, including gay bi men and gay bi men living with HIV, have the right to self-determination. And gay bi men, including gay bi men living with HIV, should be actively and meaningfully engaged at all stages and levels of research, program, and policy development, implementation, and evaluation using participatory processes throughout. HIV prevention programs and services should not focus on risks, but rather leverage the strengths, resources, competencies, social connections, capacities, and resiliency that are already present in gay bi men and their communities. Pleasure, gender, satisfaction, intimacy, love, and desire are key concepts in a fuller understanding of sex and sexuality among gay bi men, and should be included when formulating more meaningful research, programmatic, and policy responses. Researchers, prevention practitioners, and policymakers should consider structural, situational, and contextual factors in understanding HIV risk and in developing sexual health interventions tailored to the specific needs of gay bi men. Broader adoption of these principles will provide a common foundation for effective HIV prevention and sexual health services that address the specific needs of gay bi men of color. Principles of practice also can also bring balance to discussions about HIV prevention with and for gay bi men, discussions that are too often take place without us. Engaging gay bi men of color in intervention efforts necessitates a commitment on our part as preventionists to appreciate culture and confront racism, homophobia, and socioeconomic injustices when we see it. Our commitment should extend beyond the individual to focus on building community resources. This begins to get us to intervention work, which seeks to affect community-wide change in HIV-related behaviors. To do this, we must be willing to participate in community organizing efforts that invite communities to define their problems, identify the determinants of those problems, and to engage in effective individual and collective action for change to those determinants. Anything less would be participating in doing to rather than with communities we serve. Finally, I think our work must be grounded in reverence for querer, the supple Spanish word that simultaneously evokes multiple concepts. Querer is to love, to want, and even to wish. Our loved ones are our queridos, and these concepts form the most tender of greetings in emails and old-fashioned letters which open with the flourishing querido, querida. Querer can be used to express casual affection, deep love, intense passion, and magically raunchy desire, sometimes all at once. It is this multiplicity and simultaneity that mark our work, our querer for one another, our communities, and our shared commitment to wellness in a time of expanding plague. Thank you.